This is Crime Binge.
Welcome to Crime Binge,
the mini-sode.
I'm Morgan.
And I'm Sarah.
And this week, we are on mini-sode 26, where we're doing our December current events.
Yeah, talking about all the crazy shit that has happened this month, right before 2020 ends.
Yeah, and because we want to finish it out in a really 2020 manner, we're recording remotely.
Yeah, so our sound may be kind of off this time compared to normal, so we apologize for that if that happens.
Yeah, you know, work has been crazy, and this makes it a lot easier to still record, you know, in the meantime.
Exactly, because we do not live close to each other anymore.
No, the commute is no bueno anymore, but we will get through it. Okay.
So we do, before we get started, we do want to say that this upcoming Friday which is New Year's Day, is going to be our last episode for a while. We are taking a break. We are going to come back in a couple months, probably 2, maybe 3 months, rebranded and different. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that in our main episode on Friday, but we just wanted to give you a heads up that Friday is going to be our last episode for a while.
Yeah, like I said, work is very busy, so a couple months off will be good, and the rebranding is going to be very exciting, so definitely listen to Friday to hear more about it, and hopefully stick around and support us.
Yeah, hopefully you'll be back.
But like we said, we will talk about that more on Friday's episode. So for now, we're going to just get into some of the crazy stuff that happened in the world over December.
Exactly. And I think Morgan is going to start us off.
Yes, I am going to start us off today with one of my personal faves of December. Definitely not something I saw coming up in 2020 personally. And that is that the Zodiac Killer cipher is cracked after eluding sleuths for 51 years, which is very exciting. Oh, wow. Said the same thing. it is. It's super exciting. Like, after all this time, it was finally decoded, you know?
I know, and it was the first episode that we ever did.
Yeah. I'm sure that the audio quality is probably similar.
Right?
Just kidding. But something that I think is kind of funny about this cipher is that we'll get more into it in a second, but basically he made it like as difficult as possible because he didn't want people to find him because the first one was cracked within a week. So he was like spooked, you know?
Understandably.
Yeah. So just as a quick recap of the Zodiac thing, in August of 1969, following the murders of 3 of the 5 known victims, the Zodiac Killer sent 3 identical letters to 3 newspapers in the area, and each letter also included 1/3 of a 408-symbol cryptogram that the suspect said would reveal his identity. And the killer demanded that the papers publish the letters in full or he would kill again. And a week after those letters were sent, the couple in Salinas, California, cracked the cipher. You know, so he was very upset. In November of 1969, after killing another 2 victims, the Zodiac Killer sent a letter to the San Francisco Chronicle that included a new puzzle, and this cryptogram was known as the Z340, or simply the 340, because it has 340 characters in it, aptly named, you know. You've seen it, it's all the symbols, and then it has the crosshairs at the bottom. So ever since then, for 51 years, amateur and professional cryptographers, including people who worked for the FBI, have worked to crack this cipher. And it wasn't until this week, which I believe, let's see, yeah, was at the beginning of December, really. It was, this was published on December 12th. An international team solved it. So Dave Orenchak, who is one of the men who cracked the message, said, "The cipher has been unsolved for so long. It had a huge target on its back, and I felt like it was a challenge that had a chance of being solved. It was an exciting project to work on, and it was on many people's top unsolved ciphers of all time lists." Just like his other cipher, things are like purposely misspelled, which made it harder to read. Mm-hmm. But the decoded message reads, "I hope you are having lots of fun in trying to catch me. That wasn't me on the TV show, which brings up a point about me. I am not afraid of the gas chamber because it will send me to paradise, all the sooner because I now have enough slaves to work for me, where everyone else has nothing when they reach paradise. So they are afraid of death. I am not afraid because I know that my new life will be an easy one in paradise death." And this is like referring to a TV show and gas chamber because there was a call made to a talk show where a man called in claiming that he was the Zodiac Killer. And he said, "I need help. I'm sick. I don't want to go to the gas chamber." So the real Zodiac Killer was like, "I ain't no bitch. I'm not afraid of the gas chamber," basically is what he wrote in his thing. And he misspells paradise every single time with a C instead of an S. And he says it like 3 times, I think. So.
And it's like, was he purposely misspelling or was he just kind of dumb?
Yeah, I don't know. It feels purposeful, but who knows? Maybe he just really didn't know how to spell paradise. And then he also mentioned slaves in the other cipher. So he was just like talking about his slaves again. And the FBI is kind of upset that they didn't get to solve this one, but it's okay. You know, it
happens. As long as it's solved.
Yeah. They have confirmed that the team has correctly solved the cryptogram, and they issued a statement on Friday about said cryptogram, and this is why I think they're a little salty. It says, "The FBI is aware that a cipher attributed to the Zodiac Killer was recently solved by private citizens. The Zodiac Killer case remains an ongoing investigation for the FBI San Francisco Division and our local law enforcement partners. The Zodiac Killer terrorized multiple communities across Northern California, and even though decades have gone by, we continue to seek justice for the victims of these brutal crimes. Due to the ongoing nature of the investigation and out of respect," blah, blah, blah. That part doesn't matter. But the FBI is aware that the cipher has been solved really sends me every time I read it. But yeah, it was solved by David Orenchak, who is a 46-year-old software developer in Virginia. And there are also 2 other people that their names are Sam Blake, and he is a mathematician who lives in Australia. And then I believe it's pronounced Jarl, probably, like Jarl van Eyck. And he is a warehouse operator in Belgium, and also is a software developer behind a decrypting thing. So they got together and solved it.
Those are like some interesting jobs.
Yeah.
And, like, people that you wouldn't expect to work together.
Yeah, they're all, like, people who just probably, in their free time, go online and like to decipher shit, you know?
Exactly.
And that's
awesome.
And
that one guy said that it was, like, in the top 10 ciphers, and I'm like, what other famous ciphers are there? Like, this was my top one, you know?
Yeah, this is definitely the most well-known to me, but I know what I'm going to be looking up when we're done with this.
Right.
Because that sounds fantastic. Yeah, I don't know, but I'm really excited. I feel like we're closer to knowing who it is, you know, potentially because of this being broken. I don't know for sure, probably not, but in my heart of hearts, I want that to be true.
Right.
Yeah. Also, I did really badly at the top and didn't say anything about where this article is from, who it was written by, you know, so I'm going to do that now. This was written by Dan Gooding on arstechnica.com. So that is arstechnica.com. It's not probably pronounced arstechnica. That's just me being an arse, but yeah. Okay, I'm sorry. Goodbye. It's been a long day. That was a terrible joke.
Understandably.
What about you, Sarah? What is your December event?
So my first story is about the Christmas Day bombing in Nashville. And I kind of pieced together this information from three articles from CNN, The Washington Post, and an ABC article. So basically, what had happened was a white RV parked in downtown Nashville by the intersection of 2nd Avenue and Commerce Street at around 1:22 a.m. on Christmas morning. And then what sounded like 20-plus gunshots going off between 5:11 a.m. and 5:26 a.m. woke up residents who then called 911. Police ended up arriving at around 6 a.m., and the police, as well as residents, said that a warning then came from a loudspeaker on the RV. And this warning came from, like, a female automated voice, and it warned that a bomb in the vehicle was going to go off and that people needed to evacuate. The voice then began to count down, saying the vehicle will explode in 15 minutes, then 14 minutes, 13 minutes, and so on. And it also said, this area must be evacuated now. If you can hear this message, evacuate now. And the RV also broadcasted Petula Clark's 1964 hit called Downtown, which is a song about how the bustle of downtown can cure a lonely person's troubles. So the police went door to door telling people and the business owners to evacuate, because this is like right in the middle of downtown. There's tons of businesses around and apartments and stuff. So then at 6:29 a.m., the bomb goes off. At 6:35 a.m., you can hear on police radios them saying, stay back 2 blocks. For Pete's sakes, stay back 2 blocks. We've had some type of large explosion till we figure out what's going on. We've had a large explosion. If we can figure out what's going on, make sure we don't have any secondaries. So obviously they're frantic and trying to get other people to stay back and make sure more bombs aren't going to go off. And 41 businesses were destroyed or damaged in some way, and 8 people were taken to the hospital for injuries. One of the buildings damaged was an AT&T transmission facility that provides the cell phone service to much of that region, so, like, all cell phones were down for a while.
Yeah.
Authorities identified 63-year-old Anthony Quinn Warner as the bomber and the man who owned and was in the RV, and said that his remains of his deceased body were found in the wreckage. And he was the only fatality due to the RV's warnings and the police doing their job. So Anthony Warner lived 10 miles south of the place where the bomb went off in Antioch, Tennessee. One of Warner's neighbors, a man named Rick Laud, saw him on December 21st, just like outside, and struck up a friendly conversation with him. After asking how Warner's elderly mother was doing, Rick Laud said that he casually asked him, is Santa going to bring you anything good for Christmas? To which Warner smiled and then said, oh yeah, Nashville and the world is never going to forget me. he didn't, like, Rick Law didn't think much of this remark and just thought that Warner meant that, like, something good was going to happen to him. And he said that he was later speechless when he read that authorities had identified Warner as the bomber, saying that nothing about this guy raised any red flags. He was just quiet. So the other neighbors described Warner as a hermit who lived alone and kept to himself, and he also worked in IT. And the police are still looking for a possible motive on why Warner would do this. And it seems to me that he was just, like, looking for glory and to be famous, essentially.
Yeah, that one is super, super weird. When it happened, I was just kind of like, what? Like, the whole, like, the announcing it beforehand and stuff feels very strange. Like, why would you give so much time before a bomb went off, like, if you didn't want to harm people? You know, it just, it's very strange, the whole thing behind it.
It really is. Like, now that you bring that up, like, why would you create a bomb to kill yourself and do damage to all these buildings, but, like, you don't want to actually hurt anyone?
Yeah, because that's usually the intention with a bomber, is to harm others, not just themselves, you know? So
exactly.
It's a very weird motive, for sure. I don't know. Hopefully they can find something, like, in his belongings or something that can give us more of a motive.
Exactly.
All right. So my next one is going to bring down the mood a little bit here. So I apologize.
Just a little.
This one is just so upsetting to me, you know? I feel like it should be known that it's happening. I don't know. It just angered me so much when I read it.
When I heard about it happening, I was like, who the fuck? Like, it was on the news, and I was just like, what is wrong with people?
Yeah, it's very, very upsetting. So today the sources I'm using are going to be KTLA-5 and the LA Times. And these were published on December 9th originally, when this, like, was first coming up. It was on December 9th announced that Maurice Jewel Taylor Sr., who is 34 years old, was charged with 2 counts each of murder and child abuse, according to the LA County District's Attorney Office. Taylor is suspected of fatally stabbing 2 of his children, a 12-year-old son identified as Maurice and a 13-year-old daughter identified as Malakia, I believe, on November 29th. So I believe the Sunday after Thanksgiving. And then he is also accused of abusing his other 2 children, 8 and 9-year-old boys. Taylor allegedly, this is the really, really awful part, just a warning. Taylor allegedly showed his youngest sons the bodies of their decapitated siblings sometime in the 5-day period between when they were killed and when they were discovered dead. For several days, the boys were forced to stay in their bedrooms, where they did not receive any food during that time. So they were, like, being starved also. And deputies were initially called to the home after receiving a report of a gas leak. So it wasn't even, like, for the children, unfortunately. And that was when they found the 2 slain children. And Taylor has not yet pleaded to the charges. His arraignment was scheduled for Tuesday, but it went on. And if he's convicted on the charges, he faces a maximum sentence of 57 years to life in prison. So, you know, he'll probably be there for life, if not the death penalty.
I hope so. Like, how do you do that to your children? And, yeah. Like, It's so weird that he chose to do that to two of his children, but then leave the other two alive, but then like abuse them and starve them out. It's just so confusing to think about like what was going through this man's mind.
Yeah, and it's really strange because he's like 34 years old, living in LA, and was like a personal trainer. And a lot of people said that he was like a really nice guy. Like all of his clients were like, he was super nice and bubbly. So everyone was really shocked when he did this. So that's very strange to just like suddenly snap one day and I guess decapitate your two own children.
Exactly.
Yeah. It is very terrible. But in good news, he's being held on bail for $4.2 million. So don't think he'll be able to make that.
Yeah, on a personal trainer salary.
Yeah.
All right. I have one more story for us. And this is the story of a former Olympic boxer that was charged with murdering his daughter this month. And I got information from a People magazine article, as well as an article from the New York Post. So, I believe how you pronounce his name is Kaberi, and that's how I'm going to say it. So, right. Kaberi Salem, who is 52 years old, is a former Olympic boxer who represented Egypt in the Olympics in 1992 and 1996. And during his time as a boxer, he went by the nickname the Egyptian Magician. So he's actually... What?
It was dumb.
It is very dumb.
No, what I said was dumb. But also, oh, okay. Yes. Anything with magician added to it is not a great nickname, you know?
Yeah, and it's like he tried to rhyme Egyptian and magician, and it just doesn't work.
Like, it does, theoretically, but I don't love it.
Yeah. So, he's actually, like, a pretty famous boxer, because one time, Kaberi killed one of his opponents in the ring in Kansas City in September of 1999. And his opponent's name was Randy Carver. And Randy was headbutted repeatedly in the head by Salem during the early rounds of a fight. And he ended up being knocked down in the 10th round. And he kept trying to get up on his feet and just couldn't. And so he then lost consciousness and was rushed to the hospital, where he died 2 days later from head trauma that was received from all of the fucking headbutts in the fight. So, yeah, this guy's famous for that terrible thing. Okay. So, in October of 2019, his 25-year-old daughter named Ola Salem, her fully clothed body was discovered by a jogger in Staten Island's Bloomingdale Park, after it had clearly been dragged through the woods and covered in leaves. It was determined that she had been killed on October 23rd or 24th, 2019, and she was killed by strangulation. The father and daughter pair had been in Pennsylvania, where he was buying a restaurant, and it wasn't clear if he had killed Ola there or on the way back to Staten Island. But after disposing of the body, Kaberi returned to Pennsylvania before just fleeing the country altogether. He was eventually tracked to Kuwait, where members of the New York and New Jersey Regional Fugitive Task Force and U.S. Marshal Service captured him on December 3rd of this year. And he was brought back to the city to face charges to New York City. And at one point during this, he tried to throw off the cops by actually having an interview with the New York Times. And in this interview, he claimed, like, that he was so sad about his daughter's death. And he said that his daughter had been talking about being followed by a vehicle for the past couple weeks. And so, like, that must be the people who killed her.
Interesting.
Yeah. But eventually, later on this month, I believe it was the 12th, he was charged with her murder and charged with murder in the second degree, manslaughter in the first degree, concealment of a human corpse, and strangulation. He was sent to jail and is on Rikers Island, and he has a court date of February 5th, 2021.
Wow. I can't believe I haven't heard anything about that.
I know. It's like, it's crazy. I kind of had to dig in the depths to find it.
Yeah.
While I was researching, like, things to talk about, and I was like, this is crazy. Like, this should be a big fucking thing, and it's not.
Yeah, that's so interesting.
Yeah.
Because I had never even, like, heard of that one fight, but that's not surprising to me because I don't, you know sports in that way.
Yeah, especially in the early 90s before we were even born.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so let's just move on to our rapid fire segment of news stories that happened in December.
Exactly. And would you like to start us off?
Sure, I can. So this is from CNN, and it's my personal fave follow-up to an episode we've done. Fort Hood fires/punished 14 senior officers. On December 8th, the Army announced that 14 of their senior officers in Fort Hood were punished by either being suspended or relieved of their duties altogether. This decision was made after an independent review was ordered after the murder of Vanessa Guillen. This review looked into cases of violence, harassment, and sexual assault within its ranks, so clearly it found something there.
Exactly, and it's so refreshing to see something actually being done after Vanessa's unfortunate death.
Yeah.
But there's a silver lining there, and it's good to see that they're actually doing something.
Yeah, and hopefully more bases are doing the same thing so they can clear them up, you know?
Exactly. So our next one is from BBC News. And it is about the Lockerbie bombing. And the Lockerbie bombing, or more commonly known as the Pan Am Flight 103, was an aircraft that was flying from Frankfurt, Germany to Detroit, Michigan. And it had layovers in London and New York City. And on December 21st, 1998, it exploded due to a bomb being on board. The bomb went off when the plane was over Scotland, and 270 people were killed, which was the deadliest terrorist attack in the history of the UK. So, 32 years after the bombing to the day, which was December 21st, 2020, Attorney General William Barr announced that a man named Abu Aguila Muhammad Massoud was charged with the terrorist attack, and he is the third and final conspirator to be charged with this bombing.
That's so cool. I love when cases like that are closed after so many years, you know, like 32 years later, and we get to close it.
Yeah, it is crazy.
All right, this next one is going to be another downer, so sorry. But this is from People, and 5 female relatives were found on Christmas Day in a home in Atkins, Arkansas. 5 females were found dead on Christmas Day in a home in Atkins, Arkansas. The bodies belonged to 2 adult women and 3 juvenile girls ranging in ages 8 to 50. All 5 victims were shot, and police believe that the killer is not at large and actually among the dead. And the identities of the victims have still not been named. That's really unfortunate. That sounds like, I guess, a murder-suicide.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. It was crazy, though, because, like, all of the victims were female, and it's just, like, weird how that happened.
Yeah, that is very, very strange.
So our last rapid-fire one comes to us from our neighboring town of Bradenton, Florida. And this comes from a WTSP article, which is a local news station. So, in early December, a person called 911 after opening a 55-gallon drum slash garbage can type thing that he was storing for his neighbor. The drum began to smell, and so he decided to open it, and when he did, he found human remains inside. His neighbor, 48-year-old Michelle Haney, was arrested and is being charged with abuse of a dead body. So she said that she found her roommate, 40-year-old John Leonard, dead in July, and instead of calling police, she put his body in the trash can in order to collect the Social Security money and stored it at her neighbor's house. And that is just fucking crazy. Like, that's 6 months in a trash can. Like, yeah, that smell must have been insane.
Yeah, but also, like, how long did that neighbor... It had to have smelled far more, like, before these 6 months, you know? Like, it's in Florida. I don't understand... I just have so many questions. The Social Security plot never works out, you know? Just don't do it.
No, it doesn't.
If you liked this week's mini-sode, make sure that you leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and tell us which, you know, mini-sode guy was your most interested story. I don't know what I'm saying, you know? Just making words up.
Exactly. You can write anything in those reviews.
Yeah.
And also check us out on social media, on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. We're at Crime Binge or Crime Binge Podcast. And also remember to check out our episode on Friday to learn more about our announcement.
Yeah, check it out. It's going to be an interesting one, but a good one in the long run. You know, it'll be good. I believe.
Exactly.
All right. And
keep on binging.
Oh, yeah. Didn't think about that. That was
this is
going to
be
off.
Difficult.
Yeah. I don't think we're going to get it. You know?
I don't think so either.
I don't know. It's fine. We're just going to keep it as us slightly delayed saying keep on binging.
That's fine.
Yeah. Okay, good. I like it.